You're listening to The Point. We are talking with Lou Ann Johnson and Liz Baldwin, both wildlife biologists with Biodiversity Works, and they are doing river otter population research. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So what are some of the best places and times that people might spot river otters?
Well, probably March is the best time because that's when, like, the young are moving, the males are disbanding, and they're moving across the landscape. And then the data says that they're out, like, at 5 a.m., 6 a.m., and then they aren't active really during the day, and then at midnight again is, like, the best time. But I think it's just luck, really.
Yeah, sometimes you run across them, yeah. All right, Mary's giving us a call from Bass River. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Are you there?
Yep, go ahead, yep. Mary. Yep.
Oh, hi. Listen, I live on Bass River, and I'm living near the High Bank Bridge, so it's pretty salty here. I'm wondering, are there any otters known to be on Bass River up near Fallon's Pond or anywhere in this river? Have they been sighted here?
We haven't surveyed the Falmouth or the Cape area yet, I should say. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to expand. But I would almost guarantee you that there are. They definitely hang out in estuarine-type habitats, you know, salt and fresh mix. So I would be surprised if there weren't river otters in your area.
All right. I was just wondering, and I will look up the tracks and check for them when we have another snow. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering, I know Fallon's Pond is a lot more, fresh water, and I would expect them to be up more that way. But anyway, I was just wondering if you had done any studies here, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you when you do.
Great.
Okay. Thanks, Mary.
All right, Mary, thanks for the phone call. All right, Steve is calling from Brewster. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I live in a small pond in Brewster, and we've got a pair that live in the pond, and it's been really fascinating watching them over the couple seasons, and in particular, when the pond ices up, how smart they are that they make their own holes, and also how efficient they are at fishing. They just at will go down and come up with a fish, and it's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah. Is that a stocked pond?
No, it's not just a regular, elbow pond. And it's just a natural pond, but they're remarkably efficient catching these fish. And it's been fun seeing one of them. There's a great blue heron that watches them when they fish and just stands by right beside them within a few feet and picks up the scraps when they're done eating the fish.
Nice.
It's like a nice show.
Yeah.
Well, it's possible that you have like a female with maybe a helper female there or a couple of bachelors that move through, but they don't typically hang out in a family unit. The male usually doesn't have anything to do with pup rearing. So, but they sometimes otters do forage together or hang out together. So it'd be interesting.
Yeah, they're never sort of side by side. They're just, we'll see two in the pond. But I mean, they don't seem to interact a lot, but they're fascinating to watch.
Yeah, Steve, thanks for sharing your story. This could be like the bromance story we had in Chilmark, right? Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. So river otters found throughout North America, and historically you mentioned they were an important part of the fur trade. And, you know, I hate to even think about it, but are they still hunting them for fur?
Yeah, they are. I was actually just going through some of the numbers. I think the last numbers I have are pretty, well, a while ago, like 1995, but in North America, we exported 24,000 river otter pelts in 94, 95. Mm. It's like $3 million. Yeah.
They're
industry.
Not an endangered animal, are they?
They're not an endangered animal, no.
Obviously, they wouldn't be able to hunt them if they were. Yeah.
Much like other game species, you know, they can tolerate a harvest. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people out there trapping, people who mm-hmm. trap responsibly. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people have a distaste for just killing something for its fur.
Right.
But, you know, river otter pelts were used to make clothing and Native Americans. I mean, mm-hmm. a river otter pelt was actually a female medicine woman's. It mm-hmm. was her medicine bag. Mm-hmm. So highly revered.
What is it about the pelt? I know we hear a lot about beavers and other things. What is it about the otter pelt that's
just very warm.
Yeah.
Very, very warm. And waterproof. Extremely
exactly.
waterproof.
Yeah. Right. So you've been working for the past 4 years collecting the baseline data that we've been talking about on the river otters and the vineyard. And I'm guessing from some of the questions we have, there isn't anybody that you know of doing it on the Cape, Nantucket, or South Coast at this point. No. So you guys are it.
We're actually looking to expand, and we wanted to try and do a few training sessions where we could teach people, go out in the field, show them otter sign, and teach them kind of the methods that we used when we identify a latrine site, how we characterize it, and how we go back and check it once a month and what we're looking for. And so We did submit a grant, and that one didn't get funded. So we'll sort of reroute and try again. So just sort of fundraising to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like citizen science stuff, or
definitely. Yeah. I mean, otters are a good species for citizen science because people generally like to be outside. Mm-hmm. The sign is pretty easy to figure out, and you know, with the advent of geotagging photos, and so people can send us photos we can verify, or they can, you know, GPS stuff, and we can be in communication.
So if folks have some people who see them on a regular basis, if they do photos and other information, and they can send those to you, and that's helpful?
Absolutely. Yeah, right. We'd love to. Anything, especially a photo with a GPS location attached to it, a good photo. And if you're taking photos of tracks, we'd love to see something for reference in there, whether it be a ruler or give us a coin, a quarter or something. We just want to see
the size,
make sure. River otters, I can usually identify no matter what, but sometimes we get other tracks, and it's helpful to me to be able to tell you what it is.
And we'll put a link to your website up on ours so folks know where to send that information.
Great.
So what's next in your research? I guess you're going to be testing for exposure to contaminants, right, and things like that?
Yeah, we're interested in looking at how much river otters are accumulating out there, the things that are out there, and particularly contaminants of emerging concern. The EPA has a list of them, but high on that list would be flame retardants that are used in furniture and carpet that are definitely coming downstream through septic systems. And we also are interested in triclosan that's been used in antibacterial soaps. And so there's a few things out there that the EPA is more and more interested in. And because river otters are high on the food chain, eat high on the food chain, and live in, are very, you know, semi-aquatic, a lot of the fish and crustaceans that they eat spend time in the sediments in the ponds, et cetera. They'd be a good indicator, sort of a sentinel species is what we would say for us. So we could actually test hair from them. We can test blood if we were to handle them. And we have been collecting some samples and stashing them away in the freezer from roadkill river otter too. So if anybody, you know, if you see a roadkill river otter, we'd like to know about those too, a location, because we might have somebody off island who could collect something for us because we have a salvage permit for that.
Exactly. And it, you know, what that research would tell you would be helpful to humans as well.
The beauty of a sentinel species. They can tell us a lot about how the conditions are for us or what could be coming down the pike for us. Right.
So you mentioned roadkill, some of these otters that are hit by cars, and you actually have one that you bring around to schools that's been, you know, a taxidermist has done his or her thing. And so tell us about that one. What's your reaction to kids when you bring this in the schools?
Oh, they love it. And actually we're doing this like library project where it's kind of going through all the public libraries on the vineyard. And every time we take it out of the library, all the librarians are very sad because the kids miss it. Unfortunately, she got hit by a car on the vineyard, but she was in really good condition. So we were able to get her taxidermied from a donor, and she's great.
So good educational tool. Yeah. Exactly. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. If you have a river otter story you'd like to share with us, or you want to let us know if you've seen evidence of one, 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So can you give us an overview of a year in the life of an otter?
Sure. Yeah, they're born in April, around April. And then they come out of the den by June is when we usually see their pups. And they stay with the mom for the entire year, eating. She teaches them how to swim, how to eat. Basically they sleep and eat.
just like all other babies, right?
And then the fall, they'll start moving more with their mom, like across the landscape. So you'll see this increase in movement. And then in March, when the female's ready to mate again, she'll kick the pups out and they're on their own and do it all over again.
Yeah. And so the males and females separate?
Yeah.
So the males hang out with the males, females hang out with the females.
The females are with their pups and maybe a female helper, and the male has nothing to do with raising the pups.
So this is why we see these males over there having a grand old
time
at the latrine
sites.
They have no responsibility. I would imagine that's kind of fun to see if you have the opportunity of watching a mother otter teaching the babies, you know, the swimming and the, you know.
Yeah, I've just seen like zoo videos. I haven't seen it in the wild, but it'd be really cool.
Yeah. All right. So what have you learned about the otters socially from your research other than what we've talked about? We have the males who like to hang out and have a good time. What about the females? What do they do socially?
They will have a female helper, so she'll help raise the pups. But they're really their main job is taking care of the pups and teaching them the ways of the world.
Mm. All right, Pat from Orleans has sent us an email. She says, for years, we have seen otters from Nemscatic Marsh coming up into our pond on Blueberry Island Road in Orleans. They love to swim around the pond, and we love to spot them. That's great. All right.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's see. What else do we need to know about the otters here? They're not threatened or endangered, as we mentioned. So from your perspective as wildlife biologist, how does this impact how and what you study about the animal?
Well, as a biologist, one of the things you really love to have is sample size. So having studied endangered species, both Liz and I have worked in Hawaii where there are species that are really rare. It's hard to say something if you don't have a good sample. And the great thing about river otters is that they're pretty abundant around here. So now is the time to actually get that information. We can get the baseline information and have a lot of confidence in it because it's coming from a broad sample, a lot of different areas. So, it was a perfect time to get this baseline information, and then we'll be able to look back on this 20 years from now or 50 years from now or 100 years from now. Somebody will be able to say, wow, there's this information on their diet, and here's where there were definitely latrines in these areas, and are there still latrine sites actively being used? Are the trails still actively being used? And all of that will be really helpful to somebody in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important to have a baseline. Any researcher knows it's you have the snapshot in time now in the moment, but it doesn't tell you what happened in the past. And again, of course, having it now, it will help future researchers and let us know what's happening with these populations for sure.
Right. The river otters could be fewer in number. So the number of sites that are active would probably still be the same, whether there's 50 otters or 10 otters. But what you'd see is probably less activity or a few differences in what you're documenting on a month-to-month check at a site. And that would be helpful.
Now, you mentioned a couple times grants you've gotten for this or not gotten for that. So how is this research funded?
Through donations and grants is how we fund Biodiversity Works. So we about half and half, actually, at this point in time, and variety of small foundations, grants, private donor grants, and then just gifts. We just finished our second full year as a nonprofit. It's been a good experience to get something off the ground.
We've got an email from Becky who basically is commending you on your work and mentioning the fact that you rely entirely on donations and small grants. Since Biodiversity Works has already made a huge impact with their conservation work and research on a wide variety of wildlife on Martha's Vineyard. So a fan of yours there.
That's nice. Thanks, Becky.
866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. If you want to chime in, we've got a few minutes left. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So does the funding influence the direction of your work? I'm sure there's if you had all the money in the world, you could do whatever you wanted, you could, go out and do what you want. But when you have grants for specific purposes, right? So I imagine that has some influence on what you're studying.
Yes. We just discussed this at our board meeting.
Tell.
So, everybody does this. You look at what grants are out there this year, kind of what people are looking for, what types of areas they're funding. And luckily a lot of the grants that we would apply for wildlife work, have a bit of a broad range, but we're mostly interested in either species of concern, species that we need information on. So there's either a gap of information or there's a species in decline and we need to know something about that. And that's really kind of the crux of what a conservation biologist does, which is Liz and I are wildlife biologists, but specifically we're conservation biologists. We like to answer questions that are applied, and particularly to an animal that's in peril or we need to do something to help them. So So usually there's funding out there for that type of work.
All right. So what's been the biggest surprises as when you started out, Liz, you're doing your thesis on this and you think you know something about these otters. What's been the biggest surprise for you?
I think how much data I got on these, because the study I compared it to, they got about 200 visits to their latrine sites in the year, and I had 1,915.
Wow.
So I had about 250,000 images to filter through. It was a lot. So just how much data I got and how it compared to the literature, and it pretty much was spot on, which is cool, but just really getting to know the otters through these videos and stuff.
Yeah. What about you, Luann?
The wide variety of things that they eat. I was amazed. And the fact that they're digging up these mantis shrimp to eat. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, because everybody, you know, the quintessential river otter has a big fish in its mm-hmm. mouth. And the fact that they're eating these small fish, sheep's head minnows, mummy chugs, I think, wow, you know, the mainstay of their diet would be, anybody who does river otter diet analysis with me, you know, within the first two sessions, they know a mummy chug scale. Like, I mean, everybody who's a veteran says, oh, that's a mummy chug. Yeah. Oh, that's a mummy chug. Yeah.
How does that compare to their diet with, you know, other researchers or, you know, that have done, I mean, you mentioned some mm-hmm. outside of this country as well. Do they eat similar things or are their diets completely different depending on where they are?
Well, I think one of the common things would be is that they definitely go after slower moving fish. Mm-hmm. And so no matter where you are in the United States or in North America, it'll be some fish in that class that's maybe not a fast moving fish. So the only time, like, for instance, salmonids, the anadromous, a lot of the anadromous species, they're very fast mm-hmm. Fish, except if they're compromised, like trying to go through a ladder or a weir, and that's where they're vulnerable mm-hmm. to seals and otters. But suckers and some of the minnow groups, mm-hmm. Carp group, you know, that mm-hmm. no matter what, you'll find fish in those groups that are in their diet. So their diet has actually been really well studied in a lot mm-hmm. of areas in North America. But the interesting thing about coastal river otters, you know, is this sort of marine resource base. And so the first time anybody ever studied coastal river otters was after the Valdez oil spill in Alaska.
Fascinating.
And that gave us a lot of really interesting information.
All right. Luann Johnson and Liz Baldwin, wildlife biologists with Biodiversity Works, will have a link up on our website, capeandislands.org, so folks can send you their information and photos of river otters. Thanks so much for being here. Very fascinating. Appreciate
Thank you,
it.
Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vins produces The Point with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.